I want to ask again that question about perfection that I brought up when the children were up here with me. Does any one point of view get to be more important than the others? I'm afraid, my friends, that American history and current events show that maybe it does. How else could we be where we are today? How else could it have been okay to remove millions of Native Americans from the land in which they had co-evolved? How else could it have been okay to bring millions of Africans here to the Americas and force them to work long hours in horrible conditions? How else can it be okay to locate so many chemical and industrial plants along the Mississippi River between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, so many that it's called Cancer Alley? How else could it be okay for only homeowners and not renters to get help rebuilding their homes and lives in New York and New Jersey after Hurricane Sandy? These are some of the symptoms of white superiority and black inferiority that have been built up and reinforced since white Europeans arrived in the New World. Racial and environmental justice, the topic for the day, are grounded in the radical idea that all people are important, that everyone deserves to live in peace and safety and security, that nobody deserves to live in fear of individual or institutional violence or neglect. Tony Robinson, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, so many others should be alive. All the people in Dane County Jail who are there because they can't post their bail bond or because their mental illness should have access to help instead. The Ojibwe people in northern Wisconsin shouldn't be drinking water poisoned by hydrofracking and iron mining in their watershed. These things are all connected and all have the same roots. This is why the planning team for the Living Legacy Pilgrimage, marking the 50th anniversary of the Selma to Montgomery March, which Bev and Karen and I were able to attend 2 weeks ago, included a workshop on environmental justice. We spent the first day of the conference looking back at the events of and the events leading up to Selma in 1965. We attended memorials for the martyrs of the movement, including James Reeb, and we met members of their families and some of Reverend Reeb's colleagues. We talked about why Unitarian Universalists responded in such numbers to Dr. King's call to join him in Selma, and we heard from UUs who were there, who marched, who worked, who registered voters. We talked about justice and equity and compassion as some of those reasons we do that work. And we talked about the wildly unfair idea that's grown in our culture, the idea that played out in the overt racism of the civil rights era and that still plays out in today's more subtle institutional racism, the idea that some people are more important than others. And we spent a day after that looking at current and future justice movements, including Black Lives Matter and Moral Monday and the environmental justice movement. And so, not 24 hours after Tony was killed, I found myself co-facilitating a workshop on how disproportionately communities of color are impacted by environmental degradation and climate change. I quoted James Cone, the author of A Black Theology of Liberation, who wrote these words in 2001. "The logic that led to slavery and segregation in the Americas, colonization and apartheid in Africa, and the rule of white supremacy throughout the world is the same one that leads to the exploitation of animals and the ravaging of nature. It is a mechanistic and instrumental logic that defines everything and everybody in terms of their contribution to the development and defense of white world supremacy. People who fight against white racism but fail to connect it to the degradation of the earth are anti-ecological, whether they know it or not. People who struggle against environmental degradation but do not incorporate in it a disciplined and sustained fight against white supremacy are racists, whether they acknowledge it or not. The fight for justice cannot be segregated but must be integrated with the fight for life in all its forms. I said to the folks in Birmingham that environmental justice is not just about polar bears and rainforests. The ecological damage suffered by other species and natural systems wreak havoc on humankind as well, and havoc is wreaked disproportionately in our communities of color and of poverty. And I say to you today that this works the same way as all of the other racial disparities that we know in Madison and Dane County. The same mechanisms of internalized white superiority, that is, the idea that white people deserve the way the scales are tipped in our favor. That same idea that's been used to create racial disparities in education and healthcare and housing and policing has also been used to justify environmental racism. If Black Lives Matter, when we talk about the other racial disparities, then Black Lives Matter when we talk about pollution and climate change. In 1982, a group of Black women lay down in front of a dump truck carrying highly toxic PCBs in Warren County, North Carolina. And over the next 2 weeks, more than 400 protesters were arrested. 5 years later, the United Church of Christ Commission on Racial Justice issued a report that said that, quote, among a variety of indicators, race was the best predictor of location of hazardous waste facilities in the U.S. In 1991, over 650 grassroots and national leaders representing more than 300 environmental groups of color met at the first National People of Color Environment Leadership Summit to redefine environmental issues on their own terms. The environmental justice movement had begun, led by people of color, and it is still rooted in communities of color to this day. Last year's People's Climate March was a continuation of efforts by a widely diverse array of people and communities to call attention to the damage done to our earth by people with privileged points of view and the damage done to people who have been considered less than. Commit to Respond is a collaborative project by 8 different Unitarian Universalist organizations, 8 UU organizations working together. Pretty cool. Their purpose is to raise awareness of climate justice issues and to move us into action. And so today is the first of a series of 4 Sundays in which we'll be hearing different aspects of climate change and environmental justice work. I want to close with pieces from an email that I received this morning from Commit to Respond, because I signed up to be part of this effort, and so did we as a congregation. The Peace, Justice, and Sustainability group empowered ourselves to endorse this effort. So, pretty fabulous. They're corresponding with us every day. They're sending little words of inspiration, letting us know what this is all about, and helping us move forward. So they say, today marks the first day of Climate Justice Month, the day we start thinking together about changing everything. Our current crisis requires transformation. It's less about changing a few individual behaviors and more about imagining radical new ways of living. Our current paradigm assumes the expendability of some people and species in service to the dominant culture. In it, we willingly forego human health, and even human and non-human life on this planet as long as we can live in comfort and convenience today. In this paradigm, we willingly sacrifice the people on the margins of society, generally people of color, immigrants, and people who live with great financial instability to maintain the industrial growth economy. Today, Unitarian Universalists and other people of faith and conscience begin to think deeply together about altering social norms and creating climate justice. Climate justice is a global fight to dismantle the paradigm that disadvantages marginalized people and approaches Earth as a supply source and sewer rather than a system of interdependent life. Climate justice pays deep attention to those most affected by climate change to find transformative solutions grounded in profound connections with Earth and each other. Today, we begin to shift the way we understand and approach the world. I want to thank all of you for the different energy in this space today. I want to thank our young folks for their patience with some of our talking, and our older folks for their patience with some of the distractions. Today, we begin to shift the way we understand and approach the world. May it be so, and may we be so.